Well, amen, amen. Good to be saved. Good to be in church. Sure is. Hey, did you ever say this? You know what I did today? Have you ever said that? You know, like something, you've got to do something. Guess what I didn't do today? I didn't do one thing today. Wait a minute. To try to stay saved. Is that not cool? What a God. I didn't do one thing that I said, boy, if I don't do that, I'll lose it by sundown. I didn't do one thing today to try to stay saved. And I'm as saved as I was when I got up. What a God. What a God. All right. I open your Bibles to Jeremiah chapter 31. Jeremiah chapter 31. Now, I have to give you a heads up. This is, I got this new doctrine. No, I got to tell you something. We are road people. We're just road people. It's what we do, but we are made for it. We like what we do. We are junk food junkies. All right? We call that, you know, well, we don't eat franchise food. Well, good. I hope you don't, because that leaves more for me. All right? We call that vitamin J for junk. Guys, listen, if while I'm preaching to you, if I should like pass out, you just cut that vein right there, put a little mustard in there, and I will be okay. We like being on the road. It's the strangest thing. We can, you know, you're tired, you know, it makes you tired. In fact, you never really get rested, but we'll be in a meeting, and come toward the end of that meeting, our heart's already looking down the road. We're looking to hit the road and take off. It is nothing for us to drive 120 miles to go to a restaurant. Oh, yeah, we'll just drive 120 miles. Yeah. Here's how it is. When we're on the road, if we're going someplace, you know those green signs tell you how far you are from the city? When we go within 300, it's like we're there. Really. It's like mentally, oh, no problem. I'll go, hey, babe, 298, we're there. At 100 miles out, we just shut it off and coast in. I know you'll think this is crazy. Maybe it is. I read the atlas, the road atlas. Now, I don't mean that I get the road atlas to find out where I'm going to go. Of course I do that. I mean I read it. I just some days, you know, like you read a book, I just get the road atlas and read it. You just look so excited about that thought. She's just down there going, I'd never do that. But really, I do. I do. I found some very strange things. This state. Now, let me explain something, because I'm going to be talking about the road atlas in this message. Now, let me ask you a question. What is our final authority in all matters of faith and practice? The Bible, King James Bible. Okay. When I'm preaching, if I should mention the atlas or the road atlas, that is the Rand McNally road atlas. No other road atlas is the final authority in all matters of roads and atlases. And on the Rand McNally, Ohio takes up two pages. The north half is one part. The south half is another. Challenge you. I'll challenge you. I'm reading about Ohio one time. I'm just reading Ohio. I got to read two different parts of it, you know. This state is the only one I found that has. We have in this state more towns, like two towns with the same name. Or three. I think there's three Greenville, Ohio's. There's a couple of Mechanicsville or Mechanicsburg or something like that, one in the north, one in the south. I mean, Ohio, I think like about 20 times you'll find a town in the north part of it and a town in the south part of it, or maybe both in the south, both in the north. And I come to realize, don't ask me why that happened. I have no idea. Buckeye, worthless nut. But that's what it is, you know. And so, but I realized when I read that why they have zip codes. Because, like, I'm in the East Greenville 47111 instead of 98482, you know. But I read maps. I read the road atlas. I mean, it's just good reading. I enjoy reading the atlas. And I need to say, well, it didn't do anything for me. You're not called to do what we do. We live on the road. Let me tell you something. No trailer. I don't care. We have a very nice motor home. We really do. But trailer, fifth wheel. We've been through two trailers, a fifth wheel, and we're on our third motor home. They're just a glorified tent. Don't you kid yourself? I get these people all the time. They'll look at our motorhome and go, Oh, I'd like this. I said, well, I like a 3-bedroom house. You want to trade? I've never found anybody who wants to trade. You see, here's what it's called. It's called a recreational vehicle. When you guys look at it, you see recreation. I see vehicle. I'm the guy that lays under it, you know? You know what it's like to have, you're driving down the road. We had this fifth wheel. We're driving down the road. And this guy pulls up beside us on the right. You say, why? Because I'm in the left. You say, why? Because I'm going faster than they are. That's why. Because I'm driving by grace. Not by law. But and this guy's waving to Kathy, you know. She's sitting in the passenger seat in our dually. And she goes, this guy's waving. He wants something. I said, well, put the window down and see what he wants. And so, you know, she put her window down. And she goes, what? He goes, you're on fire. Well, now that will get your attention. Then I looked out the mirror. We got flame. We had a bearing go out in the third axle back. Buddy, we're shooting flames down the highway. Called a preacher up ahead, gave him all the part numbers, met him at a truck stop, had lunch, did a bearing job and a brake job in the truck stop, and down the road we went. It's what we do. We are road people. And the strangest thing, we raised 3 boys on the road. When we went on the road, John, our oldest, was 10. Luke was 1. And you know how baby, little kid, you get some little children, and they're tired, and they go, take me home. You know, take me home. Let me go home. Our children never said that. You know what Luke would say when he's real tired? Take me to my trailer. Because it's never home. It really isn't. It's never home. But it's what we do. And I want you to see a verse here that has nothing to do with this sermon, but it's sure. It's Jesus wept because you don't have a motorhome. And that's what I'm going to preach to you about tonight. Jeremiah chapter 31, it says this, verse 21. Set thee up waymarks. You know, what's a waymark? Mileage marker. That's basically what it is. It's a mileage marker, what we call. Set thee up waymarks. Make thee high heap. Set thine heart toward the highway. Even the way which thou wentest. Turn again, O virgin of Israel. Turn again to these thy cities. Let's bow our heads and let's talk to the author of these words. Father. Father, it's so neat for a piece of dirt to talk to you and say, Father. And I can say it because of what you did. It is nothing we did, no baptism, no church membership, no good works, no nothing. It was all Jesus Christ. And God, look at these people. Tuesday is not a church night. That means every single person in this room has something they're usually doing at this time of night on a Tuesday night. That means every person sitting in this room told you tonight that they'd rather be in church than do what they usually do. God, I hope you're blessed by that. I really do. I hope you're blessed that these people want to go to church tonight. But Father, if they I know they want something from you and they want something from this book. And if they don't get it, it will be my fault. And I don't want their trip here to be in vain. So God, for their sake and for yours, will you please get Sam Gipp out of your way and out of their way and speak to the heart of each individual. Accomplish your purpose in each life. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. It says there in verse 21, it says, set thine heart toward the highway. And that is what we do. We set our heart toward the highway. Now, let me explain something about this Rand McNally Road. So I'm going to talk to you tonight about some roads you can travel. Okay? Some of those are physical roads, just like the one you got out here, you know, 475. And then some of them are metaphoric, and you'll understand which are and which aren't. But when let me explain something about the Rand McNally Road Atlas. The interstate, an interstate is a blue line. You pick up a Rand McNally Road Atlas, you look at it, if you see a blue line going across the state, then that's going to be an interstate. I don't know if you understand this about our interstate system. It's not the interstate system. It's the Dwight D. Eisenhower Interstate Highway System. It's named for Dwight D. Eisenhower because, you know, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, our country was afraid that they would then invade California. And but anyway, it would have been very difficult to get our army across the country to defend California. And so Dwight D. Eisenhower said, we need a system of highways, 4 lanes, so that we can move our military rapidly across the country, east to west, north to south. Every military base in this country at the main gate has a 4-lane highway that takes it to our interstate system. In a national emergency, they're going to shut down those interstates, and they'll move, you know, like if the enemy was coming from the west, all four lanes be used by the military to go west to defend the country. When I say the interstate system, I'm talking about the blue and red shield sign, you know. If it is a north to south interstate, it is an odd number. 71, north to south. 77, north to south. Go over there to Washington, D.C., 95, north to south. Go over to California. They start with the low numbers on the west and go to the east. So you got Interstate 5 goes north to south in California. You go all the way to the other side of the country, and Interstate 95 goes north to south up the east coast. If it is an even-numbered interstate, it goes east to west. That's why you've got 80 goes through here, and they start at the bottom and work to the top. So you've got way down at the bottom between California and Yuma, you've got Interstate 8. Then above that, you've got 10. And you've got, you got 80 comes through here and 90 goes above it. And then you get above 90, you got 94. If you're coming into a city, if it is a loop around the city, it has the number of the interstate preceded by an even number. You've got 75, it was north to south past Toledo. 275 goes around the city, north to south on one side, 475 goes on the other. Sometimes you'll be coming into a large city, and you'll see those even numbers, and that means that takes you around. Going down around Cincinnati, there's a 275 that goes around Cincinnati like a loop. But then you'll see something, it might say 375. That's an odd number. That is a spur into the city. So if it's got the interstate number, with an even number, it's taking you around. It'll take you from this interstate to this one. If it's an odd number first, it's taking you into the city. And it's all done real well. There's no grade. There should be no grade on interstate higher more than 7%. Trust me, 7% is a lot. I've done it. Coming down, it's a prayerful time. Prayerful time. Worst we've seen is 12%. Worst we ever saw was a 10%, but it's 5.5 miles. And you say, what do you do at the top of that hill? You confess things you didn't even do. That's what you do. Brother, you would be right with God. There's no guardrails on this mountain. I told Kathy, we're looking down at Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I said, babe, I said, there's Jackson Hole. I said, that's where they'll send the ambulances to pick up our bodies. And so the Bible talks about set your heart toward the highway. So in the Rand McNally, the interstates are blue. And then you have what we call Restaurant Row. Restaurant Row are those, it's a four lane, and it's going to be where you're going to find the gas stations and the restaurants and the car dealerships. And those are a yellow line with a red border, little thin red border on each side in the Rand McNally. Then you've got what would be called a major highway, and that would be a bold red line. Then there's a not so major highway, a lot of times two lane, usually two lane, and that is a non-bold red line. Now, let me explain something. When you are, our motorhome is 42 feet long. When I hook up, believe it or not, when I hook up my truck to it, we pull a full-size GMC truck. When I'm hooked to it, we are longer than semi. In fact, in California, I'm not legal, but don't tell them. Lengthwise, we're about 3 feet longer than you're allowed to be in California. And when you hook that up, when you're looking at that map, you know them real faint red lines? You think twice before you turn onto one of those. And then there's a gray line. Beware of the gray line. Adventure starts at the gray line. Sermon illustrations start at the gray line. And so does purgatory, all right? And so I'm going to talk to you tonight about some roads that you, like I said, you can travel. They're here. Some of them we have been on, and then some of them are just a kind of a metaphor. But the first one. Now, if you do this, if you get the Rand McNally Road Atlas, and look at the state of Nevada. Now, the state of Nevada is basically shaped about like that. Okay, California comes down around it, and right here, right about there, is Reno, Nevada, on the far east side, or west side. On the east side is a little town called Ely, E-L-Y, Ely, Nevada, and in Ely, Nevada. Is a campground. We've stayed at that campground. We stayed at that campground for a very good reason. If you look at the Nevada map on the map of Nevada, the state, on the Rand McNally, you're going to see going from Reno on the west to Ely, Nevada on the east, you'll see one of those narrow red lines, not a bold one, but a narrow red line. Now, those aren't near as scary out west as they are here. I mean, here, it could go everywhere. Out there, man, if you could lock the wheel straight, turn the cruise on, you could go sleep for a while, and you'll wake up, you'll still be on the road. And that is State Route 50 that goes east to west from Reno to Ely. But right next to where it says State Route 50, in little words, it says the loneliest road. And I'm reading the map one night, and I'm reading Nevada, and I saw this thing and said the loneliest road, and I said, I gotta go there. You say, why do you have to go there? Well, it's either that or Everest, because it's there, that's why. And I'm not going up Mount Everest, so I'm going to go to the loneliest road. And so I told Kathy, I said, babe, I said, look at this. That's the loneliest road. I said, we've got to go to the loneliest road. And so we had some time off. We had been down in Vegas at a meeting, lost everything we had. All we'd afford was a little cheap campground in Ely, Nevada. Hey, it is not unheard for us to park. I mean, drive for 8 hours and park, and within 30 minutes be on the road to drive another 100 miles. It is just what we do. And so we pulled into Ely, we got this campground, and the next day we headed down the loneliest road. We started at Ely and we headed west. We drove for 120 miles. Took about an hour. And, boy, I'll tell you what we saw. You know what we saw? Nothing. We saw dirt and rocks and cactus and dirt and rocks. And that is all that is there. You don't see houses. You don't see buildings. You don't even see much traffic. You say, why'd you go there? I just had to go there, man. I mean, it's the loneliest road. I'm a road person. It may not do anything for you. I couldn't care what it does for you. It did something for me. And we're driving this thing. Now, let me tell you what is exactly 120 miles. There is something. You hit Ely, Nevada. You go west for 120 miles. You know what you'll find? A little roadside park. We pulled into this roadside park. We had a picnic. I mean, it's, 100 degrees or whatever. Kathy and I had this picnic. We walked around the roadside park about three times, got in our truck, drove 120 miles back. You say, that's crazy. You're just not a road person. That makes complete sense to us, all right? But here's the thing. It is the loneliest road, and I'll tell you, I like it, all right? You know, if you ever get to Death Valley, my wife and I love Death Valley. It is the single quietest place on the planet. You get out, and all you can hear is the ringing in your ears. And we're out there on this loneliest road, brother. It's nice and quiet. It's wonderful. We went out there, and we drove out there, saw nothing. We drove back, saw nothing. But let me tell you what we didn't do. Do you know what we didn't do? We didn't buy a piece of ground on the loneliest road and build a house. You say, why? Well, it's just great to drive on. You heard that old phrase, nice place to visit, wouldn't want to live here? Loneliest road. Guys, let me tell you, there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. We are becoming a nation, and you young people, I fear for you, you can't be alone. You know, I got a smartphone, and it does bother me. It's a little smarter than I am, but you know, I know it's smart when they start pushing buttons on me, but you know what I'm worried about? I am worried that the 30s and under, because of the internet and the network and Twitter and all that and texting, you guys can't make a decision. You have a decision to make, and you know what you do? You get on your phone and you bounce it off of 5 or 6 guys to see what they would do. Why don't you shut the stinking phone off and just make a call? Well, I might make the wrong call. That's okay. You won't die. Okay? Well, in most cases, you won't die. But the fact is, guys, I think we got a generation. They can't think. They're afraid to do anything outside their little network, outside. Well, I better not do that because then I'll stand out from the group. Yeah, we watch movies about individuals. We're scared to death to be an individual. And guys, sometimes you know what you need? You need to be alone. You need to get away from a place and be alone. I really do. I am always, always thinking. I ponder, I think. I got this when I was pastor. Right behind my desk, here was the wall bookcase, and right there in back was a poster. I had a poster on the wall right behind my desk. And it was a poster of a gorilla. And this gorilla, they just caught him. He is like this. And it's just what he looks like. And the caption of that poster is, sometimes I sit and think, and sometimes I just sit. You say, why did you have that? Because that's me. Sometimes I sit and think. Guys, I was we were at a campground in California earlier last year, and I took a notepad, I took my pen, I had my Bible with me, and what I do is I put some things in, and then I let them brew, I let them cook a little while, and then I review them, and I start thinking. I mean, I put my brain in gear, I sit, I do nothing, but my brain is in gear. And I'm telling you, here's what I'm doing, something came to me, and I take my notepad, and I wrote down an idea, and I set it down, and 60 seconds later, another one came through. I mean, for 2 hours, all I did was about every 60 seconds to 120 seconds, something else came through. You say, what were you doing? My brain was working. Guys, you got to put your brain in gear. Do you understand? You know, I used to mock Americans, say they don't have brains. Fact is, you guys got good brains. You just never use them. You don't. You use your remote instead. You use your phone. You got to ask somebody else what they think. You don't have to know what somebody else thinks. Well, what if I make a decision that doesn't go along with my friends? So what? You lose a friend over that, you never had a friend anyway. And so sometimes I sit and think. I mean, I will sit there, brother, and I will go down through this, I will go down through that, I will make notes, then I'll expand on the notes. It'll end up a book or an idea or some kind of a project. Sometimes I sit and think. Sometimes I just sit. If you have a house, you listen to me, and don't you take what I'm about to say too lightly, because you won't think it's very important. You'll think I'm overstating the fact. If you have a house, sir, and you never sit in the backyard on the patio with a glass of iced tea in the summer and do nothing, you're a fool. You know what I long for? I long for the day when we can live in something and walk out the front door and walk all the way around the place we live and be on our property. It never happens. Anytime we step out of the door, we're on the property of a church, of a campground, somebody's house. I mean, we are always, I would like to be able to step out my door and walk all around the place where I live and have it be my property. You know what I long for? I long to sit in a backyard with a glass of iced tea and just look at the grass grow for a while. You know, that's what you need to do sometimes. Sometimes you just need to sit. Now, I can tell. I know myself. I can tell when I'm sitting and thinking and when I'm sitting. My brain is always engaged. I always look at airplanes. I was listening tonight to the song service, you know, and John doesn't even know it, but I told your preacher, I said, man, he already hit 283 and 406. That don't mean anything to you. 283 was small block Chevy. 406, 1962 is big block Ford. What does that mean? I'm always thinking. I am. I'm just always looking at something. I'm always thinking. And here's what happens. I always look at an airplane. If I hear an airplane, I just have to look up. If I know what it is, I have to look up. I have to look at an airplane. I'm mechanically minded, and I'm always thinking. But if I get into a backyard, usually with a glass of iced tea or a cup of coffee, you know how I can tell when I quit thinking? A plane will fly over, and I don't even look up, but I find myself watching birds fly. I was in Arizona. We were parked in the backyard of a preacher, and they were away, and the garbage cans were up by their back door, and so I was bringing our garbage, you know, and I'm standing in their backyard, and I put the stuff in the garbage, and there's a chair on the back of their house. I didn't have very long. I had about 20 minutes. Brother, I mean, you understand something. When you live on the road, we relax in a hurry. Sometimes to get family, we would rent a condo, and if you walked in, we could pull up at 12 noon, and if you walked into that place at 12:30, 30 minutes later, you'd think we've been living there for 6 months. My boys hit that place. I mean, they had their car posters up. They're in a bedroom like this, lounging. I mean, it was like we've been living there because we have to do everything in a hurry, and we just relax in a hurry. I sleep fast. And so I thought, man, I only got about 20 minutes. I sat down in this chair, and almost instantly, we were on the glide path for Phoenix International Airport. And when I was walking out there to take that garbage, I'm watching airplanes taking off. I know what they are, brother. I know what every one of them is. I'm looking at them. And I sat in that chair, and a plane took off, and I never paid any attention to it. And I said, ooh, it's happening. And about that time, a bird flew across there. And I watched that bird fly. Say, what was it? I was being alone. People, you all need to be alone. You all need to get away from everybody and everything and just let that brain think. or just let it not think. I mean, if you say, well, I've got so much to do. I know you got a lot to do. Everybody's got a lot to do. Sometimes you need to just put your brain in neutral and relax. Lower your blood pressure. It'll be good for you. But here's the difference. That's being alone. And everybody needs to be alone. Nobody needs to be lonely. You know, you ever meet somebody just wanted to be lonely? Boy, they run off all of their friends. You try to befriend them. You try to be nice to them. They run you off. And then you know what they do? They play the violin about, well, you know, nobody cared about me. Well, they cared about you for 6 months, knocked on your door, tried to come over there and give you some fellowship, invited you to come here, invited you to this. You said no. You said no. You wouldn't go. You wouldn't let them come over. You wanted to be lonely. You're a fool if you want to be lonely. It's good to be alone. It's not good to be lonely. We went to the loneliest road. We visited. I don't want to live there. When I think of that road, I still get excited. When I think of getting my wheels on that thing, spinning them up, going down that road, I'd go for a picnic right now, 120 miles. I don't care. I would enjoy it right now. If I think of owning a piece of ground and putting up a house, I want to put a gun to my head. Because I like to be alone, but I don't want to be lonely. Guys, there's a loneliest road. There is another. Oh, there you go. Did that hurt anybody's ears? Anyway, there's another. I've been on this road. Now, you get on this road. It's a real road on this ground, on this earth. Here's the problem. If you want to go to it, you got to get on an airplane. You got to fly across the Atlantic. You've got to probably go through Gatwick or Heathrow in London, and you catch a flight into Scotland, and then you got to go up into the Highlands. And there's a road that comes out of the Scottish Highlands. It comes from Lake Marie to Braymore. And that road was built in 1840 to 1850. That's when they built that road. You know what they call that road? That road is called the Road of Destitution. We have all heard in the past of our country, there have been times when there were great immigration. And you remember when the Irish all came over here during the what? The Irish potato famine. We've all heard about that in history of our country. It was a history of Ireland, and when they had no potatoes, those people were starving, they came over here. Well, guess what? When the Irish had a potato famine, so did the Scots. There were no potatoes in Scotland either. And you had some people that were starving to death. Once fruitful farms, men who had all of their lives, their father had been a farmer, and their grandfather had been a farmer, and their great-grandfather had been a farmer. I mean, that land was theirs. And now that land, there's nothing there, and their family is starving to death. And you know what they did? They built the road to destitution. And they built that road. It came down out of the Scottish Highlands, down into the lowlands, so they could leave the old life behind and start a new life. You know, sometimes you have a plan for your life. I'll bet you I'm talking to somebody. You had some kind of a plan for your life. It didn't exactly work the way you thought it should. Well, you know what you do? Leave it behind. Well, yeah, but I ain't going to work. I mean, I'm sorry. Whatever you know, you're still working on 8-track tapes. I don't know what you're planning on doing. But you know what you've got to say? There's no future here. You need to hit the road of destitution. Well, yeah, but my dad was that, my grandfather was that. Well, that's what they were. But there's a difference, too. They lived, and you're not living because times have changed or circumstances. Guys, not everybody is a fool or a bad farmer. Sometimes they are victims of circumstances. And maybe those guys, some of those potato farmers, they were just victims of circumstances. It didn't matter if they were stupid farmers or smart farmers whose ground didn't yield them anything. They both starved to death. But I'm going to tell you who starved to death. The ones that stayed there by the dustbin, and just, well, this is what I was born, and this is what I'll die. Then you'll die. Unless you want to hit the road of destitution. Just say, you know, maybe I'll just go down to lowlands and I'll make furniture. Well, you never made furniture. Yeah, but I ain't making potatoes. And find something you can do, guys. You had some dream. You had some goal. And there comes a point in your life when you just got to realize this isn't going to happen. Then find something you can do and put your feet on the ground and do something with it. Guys, the road of destitution, they left an unfruitful past behind. There is another road. I've not been there. I hope to be there this October. This October, we're in plans for going to what is known as the Holy Land. I don't know that I want to go over there so I can sing, I walk today where Jesus walked. I think I'd like to go there just because of the mental picture when you read your Bible. You know, we think north to south. North is up, south is down. But in the Bible, that's not how they do it. They talk about height is up. So you could be in Damascus and say, we're going up to Jerusalem because you were going up in altitude, though you were going south, you were going up in altitude. It's a city set on a hill. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see some of the places that I've read about. And if you go to Jerusalem, there is a road that they call the Via Dolorosa, the way of the cross. Now, here's what they say that road is. They say that road is the road that the Lord Jesus Christ, the night he was crucified, carried his cross from Pilate's judgment hall to Golgotha and was crucified. Now, I'm a little skeptical on a couple of things on that. Number one, I don't know that anybody said the day of the crucifixion, hey, guys, mark this down. It'd be a good tourist attraction one of these days. Secondly, it is the Roman Catholic Church that defines the Via Dolorosa, and it's strange that they seem to have a church on top of anything that's historic. They think they built a church over what was the manger. They think they built a church what was over Calvary. I mean, they have built churches over everything. I don't think what they call Calvary was Calvary. I think the Calvary, you've seen the picture where it shows the, you can see the cliff in the background. It looks like the face of a skull. Right in front of it is a bus station. I think that's Calvary. That's called Gordon's Calvary. I don't know that road, that street, or that way that they call the way of the cross, I don't know that the Lord took every foot of it or walked every foot of that when he was crucified. But here's the two things I do believe. Number one, he may have been on part of it. And number two, if he was never on any of it, there is a way of the cross, isn't there? I mean, they may not have it marked, and they may not know what it is or what it was, but he did get from Pilate's judgment hall to Calvary, did he not? So there is a way that leads to the cross, isn't there? Oh, man. Do you remember hitting that on-ramp? Man, I remember the day I hit the way of the cross. I was telling you, man, I'm sitting in a church just like this one, three rows back. Invitation was given. It was a missionary to the Philippines. He was preaching, and he gave the invitation. And that morning, that was the only time. Listen, I've been going to that church for 3 months. I was the only Roman Catholic they had, absolutely lost it. Amen when they preached. That preacher would say something, and I agreed with it. I heard these other people saying amen. I said, okay, that's what to say. I said amen. You say, well, you weren't even saved. Well, I think you're still allowed. I didn't know I had to be saved to say amen. I thought I had to agree. I liked what he was saying. But that morning, I stepped out. You know what I hit? I hit the on-ramp to the Via Dolorosa. You know why you're here tonight? Because at some time in some place, it might have been a completely different time in a different place than it was for you and it was for me, but if you're here and you're saved tonight, you know why you're here? Because you hit that on-ramp to the Via Dolorosa. Isn't that a good one? Brother, you know, you can spin your wheels in this world. I mean, there are people that are just going around in circles and around in circles and around in circles. They are lost. You know what they need? They need to hit that way of the cross. Brother, when you show up at Calvary, every single thing in eternity for you changes. Isn't that right? And so you need to hit the way of the cross. That leads to salvation and a brand new life. Now, there is another road. And let me explain this. Now, it's two words. This is described with two words. If you get the Rand McNally Road Atlas, you'll find this in any one of the states. It doesn't matter what state it is. Every one of them has one of these. You'll see this. You'll see this. And this can be, it's a route. Now, do you understand there's between a highway and a route? A highway is asphalt or concrete that is on the ground. A route is a way to get from point A to point B. I'll bet you, I'll tell you, I used to come through Toledo. You remember when they were doing all that work on the north-south 475? And 475 would go this way, and it went under some bridges, and it went over this other way. They were routing you. And then they'd fix this part, and then they routed you a different way. See, they were making it a route. And you look on the Rand McNally, any state, and you'll see this little green dotted line. And it'll be on maybe part of an interstate, and part of a red road, part of a yellow road, part of a thin red line, part of a gray line. And here's what that green dotted line designates. That designates a scenic highway. La, 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 la. I mean, can't you see it? Can't you just see the sun rays coming up behind the mountains? Can't you hear the birds? And can't you see the blue sky and the palms or the pine trees waving in the breeze? I mean this, oh, I love the scenic highway. You've seen it. Yeah, you know, you're watching TV. Have you ever noticed that it's usually a BMW commercial, and this guy's got a BMW because he's smarter than everybody else? He comes over a rise on the four lane. He's on the interstate, and in front of him, there it is, brother. I mean, 5 miles, the traffic, it isn't moving slow. It's absolutely stopped. Brother, we've been at where we shut her down. We've been in that stuff, brother. We just shut that big diesel down. You say, what? Why do you do that? We live there. I don't care where I'm at. We got the kitchen. We got the bathroom. I mean, after about 2 hours, we got people outside the door going, ah, should have bought them tomorrow. Could wait. And this guy comes over the rise, brother, and there it is. You know, you see it. I mean, there's cars stopped, people on their cell phones, look at their watches, hoods up, engine steaming. Oh, no, I'm trapped. But somehow, miraculously, God always supplies this BMW owner with an off-ramp. And so he gets off this interstate highway, and suddenly takes this sweeping off-ramp, and next thing you know, he's cruising on this little two-lane highway. He's the only car on the road. There's a beautiful lake over here. There's beautiful pine trees over here. And he's motoring down this road on the scenic highway. Man, it just makes you just want to go there right now, doesn't it? Doesn't exist. You know where the scenic highway exists? From this here to this here. It only exists in your brain. Can I tell you what really happens? Okay. I knew you wanted me to. Mr. BMW comes over the rise. There they are, 5 miles, stop traffic. He can see the Gibbs RV up there, but we don't care. Hoods are up, steam is rising, tempers are flaring, people are talking on cell phones, but there's the magic off-ramp. And he takes his BMW and he sweeps off this off-ramp. Oh, man, there's the lake. There's the pines blowing in the weed, the wind. And he comes around a turn, and he is number 75 in a parade. I mean, there are 74 cars ahead of him. Number one, this guy's 95 years old. He was only 85 when he left home. And he's trying to decide if he wants to have his fatal heart attack right now. Oh, listen, guys, when I get behind those guys, and it's double yellow line for eternity. You will never pass. You are going to shrivel right here. Now, I'll tell you what I do. When I see those, I give the guy in front of me, I give him the benefit of the doubt. Certainly, he does not want to celebrate a birthday on this road. We come to a passing zone. I wait for him to pull out and pass. Ooh. Ooh. When I get in those things, you know what I do? I count how many I'm going to pass at one time. I say, I'm going to get these three first, I'm going to get those next two, and then I'm going to get four. You were looking at a guy in a motorhome, I passed 7 Corvettes at one time. I did. They're all in a trailer of a big truck. But here's the thing, guys, here's the thing. When I say scenic highway, you know what some of you thought? Oh, I bet that's just beautiful. It doesn't exist. It is the most, listen, I'll tell you what scenic highway is. It's usually a two-lane. It's winding back and forth and up and down and back. Your maximum speed, you average about 45 miles an hour. And by the time you get there, you want to kill somebody. You want to do somebody bodily harm. Guys, I am sorry. I told you, you don't think. You know what you do? Look, computer. You think a computer's smart? It's stupid. It's a stupid machine. Computer's a stupid machine. Dumb machine. I went to college. Before I got saved, I went to college to become a computer programmer. Graduated. A computer can't do a thing. Oh, yeah, my computer does everything. No, that's because now you buy them and they're bundled and they got all this software on it. I hate to, isn't it funny when you can talk about the old days of computers? You used to buy computers.
Let me tell you, kid. When I got a computer, it had a crank on the side.
My first computer didn't even have a hard drive. Commodore 64. I mean, it did not have a hard drive. Your pastor and I, we were talking. The next one I had, he had one 20 megabyte hard drive. Ooh, who's ever going to need more than that? My goodness, some of you, you're carrying a thumb drive in your pocket or your purse. You got more than that on you. Isn't that right? But in the old days, you bought a computer and it didn't come with any programs on it. If you turned it on, if it had a face, it would look like this. Now, here's the amazing thing. You take that computer, you turn it on, and you put a word processing program in it. You load this word processing program, and an amazing transformation takes place. Now, it's ready to correct your spelling and grammar, right? Oh, look how smart. Smart? Ask what 2 and 2 is. Because it hadn't been programmed to do that, right? So you know what you guys do? You get done with church, you go home, turn the TV, put your brain in neutral, and watch a program. Oh, so what you're saying is somebody thinks your mind is nothing but a stupid computer that'll only do what it's programmed to do? So you watch those stupid programs, and you know what you do? You start thinking like you're programmed to think. And I know what you think. You think if the movie doesn't have bad language and violence and sex, it's okay. Now look, I like cars and I like cartoons. How can you not like cars and cartoons? I mean, I like Easter eggs, guys. But there was a little movie called Cars. I don't think anybody got shot. That was the downside of it. At least they could have run over somebody crossing the street, you know. But there's a scene in that movie. And it has to be taking place in South Utah, because South Utah is one of the most beautiful places in this country. And it shows these beautiful rock formations, and there's two little cars are sitting there, and one says, oh, this is beautiful, and the other one says, yes. But nobody sees it anymore, because to save 15 minutes of time, they put an interstate around the city, and so now nobody sees it anymore. And then you're sitting there going, interstates are bad. You're an idiot. You have been programmed to say that. Well, you know, I just don't want to drive on interstate, and I just don't want to eat. I don't want to eat factory food, assembly line food. Really? Let me give you a little challenge, Bucko. Next time you go on vacation, do these two things: drive only on two-lane highways. Eat only in places you've never heard of before. They're easy to recognize because somehow they're all world famous. Bill's world famous hot dog. Yeah, I get off the airplane and Papua New Guinea, and they go, have you had one of Bill's world famous hot dogs? We heard about it. Nobody's heard of the place. Listen, you go to those places. Now, I was there one time, you know, and I picked up my fork and I looked at it and I called the waitress over. I said, ma'am, she said, a problem? I said, well, I said, looks like last guy had eggs. You say, did she give you a clean fork? No, she charged me for the eggs. But if you got a baby, they're great. The baby seat, high chair, it doesn't even have a safety belt, but it's okay. Put the kid in there, he sticks. That's why our boys aren't with us. They're still stuck. I went to one of those places, I had a short sleeve shirt on. I'm sitting there like this on a table, and as I lifted my hand, it just kind of peeled off. But you'll get a disease that they don't even have a name for at the Center for Disease Control. Go ahead. Get on that two-lane highway. Look, you get out on that two-lane highway and all you do is back and forth and up and down and back and forth and up and down, and that's all you do. And you know what you'll get on a four-lane, you'll stop at a Burger King, and you'll say, thank God. I was in Korea. You know what's nice about Burger King? Tastes same place, tastes same all the way around the world. That's a wonderful thing. I was 10 days, I think, in Korea. I'm eating kimchi in the name of world peace. And one night they said, we're going to the buffet. I said to myself, who can mess up a buffet? Got that question answered that night. A Korean. Man, I walk in there, here's this buffet. I mean, fried sea eel, shark fin soup. I'm thinking, where are the drumsticks? Wouldn't you know, they took me to the buffet the very night I was fasting. Truth. I had a one-word prayer all week long. I had a one-word prayer. I'm in this room. I'd get on my knees. I mean, I was on my knees because I was serious. And I'd say this, Lord, Whopper. You didn't ask God. One day, the two Korean pastors I'm with, they came and they got me, they had about half a dozen young men. Korean boys are going to be preachers someday. And they said, we're in Seoul. We're going to downtown Seoul. We're going to the American part of the city. Okay. We walked to the American part of Seoul, South Korea. Walked right into a Burger King. John Calvin lives. I sat down at a booth, and this is where pride got me. I am sitting at this booth, and I said to myself, I am right with God. Look at this. I said, Whopper, look where I'm at. I mean, it was like Hezekiah right after the healing, brother. I was in trouble. My heart was lifted up. And this Korean pastor comes over. He says, now, the young men are going to eat over here, but we don't want you to eat this food. We're going to take you across the street to the Indian restaurant. Let me tell you something. I will eat Korean food in Korea to not offend a Korean. I ain't eating Indian food nowhere to offend nobody. And I said, Indian food is not one of my favorites. Oh, you don't like Indian food? I said, well, it ranks, it's on my list just below a bar of soap. In fact, if you got a bar of soap, I'll be fine. So they took me to the American restaurant. Guys, you know you're in trouble when the steak comes and it is shaped like this, and it is thicker than that. You go to some of them places on a two-lane highway. You go to some greasy spoons, them Tomaine palaces. I'm telling you, you go around the world and eat some of these places. I was in the Philippines one time, four bowls of meat. Four different bowls of meat and gravy. I said, what is this, to my Filipino pastor? I said, what is this? He says, that's beef. Huh. Well, what is this? That's chicken. Four food groups, beef, chicken, pork, fish. Anyway, I said, what's this one? He said, that's pork. Beef, chicken, pork. I said, what's this? He goes, that's a Filipino dish. I said, yeah, but what is it? I don't know what it was, but I treed three cats walking out of that restaurant. You don't even want to know what I did to the parked cars. But, I'm telling you what, guys. You know what I was doing on December 19th at noon, 1999? I can tell you exactly what I was doing. December 19th, noon, 1999, I'm sitting in Seoul, South Korea. I'm eating whatever they put in a rolled-up piece of lettuce. They can put anything in a rolled-up piece of lettuce, and I'm eating this thing. You know what I was doing at noon on December 19th, 1999? I was sitting in Honolulu International Airport at the Burger King having a Whopper. You say, how'd you do that? Right after I ate that food in Seoul, I got on a plane, I flew to Hawaii, I crossed the international dateline. Brother, when a Baptist preacher can have two lunches on the same day, this is as near to heaven as you can get. And you people who are too stuck up to eat, you used to like food until they made you a snob. Now you got to have snob coffee and snob ice cream and snob food. You're going to have $8 cups of coffee and $14 ice cream cones. Well, I want one that somebody put their fingers in. Are you out of your stinking mind? You go to some of them places I've eaten, and you know what you'll do? You come back here, you'll lick the floor of McDonald's. You get out on that scenic highway. You know what I'm telling you? I'm telling you there's no scenic highway. You know where it exists? It's idyllic. It exists in your head. And you know, that is exactly what some people think life is. Well, we're just going to get married, and this is all just going to, we're just going to do this. This is all going to be wonderful. If you're not on drugs, get on drugs. Because you need some excuse to be thinking the stupid things you're thinking. No sober person, no sane person to think like you're thinking. You need to get on something so at least you can say, well, I don't know, I was on drugs. You don't want to say, well, were you on drugs? No, that was just me. Oh, no, take drugs. But I'm telling you guys, we get this, and our young people, they're all looking for this scenic highway, this idyllic, oh, life is going to be wonderful. Life's just going to be, it's just, we're just going to skip. All of life, we're just going to hold hands and skip. And it's all going to be wonderful. That's here. But once you get the off-ramp, pal, once you go around the first turn and you find out everybody else got the same idea, and you realize that only exists as a dotted line on a map, It only exists as some beautiful picture in your brain, but it is not real. You better understand that scenic highway doesn't exist, guys. There is another one. I want you to go to Isaiah chapter 19. Isaiah chapter 19. Look at verse 23. In that day shall there be a highway out of Egypt. Boy, I'll tell you something, guys. If our people, I don't mean America, I don't mean Southern Baptists. I don't mean fundamental independent Baptists. I'm talking about fundamental, independent, King James Bible-believing Baptists. If you don't know who that is, you. We need to hit the highway out of Egypt. Egypt is a type of the world. You know, John and I were talking one time, and he said, what's the difference between Christianity today and what it was like in the 70s? And I said, you are talking about the 1970s, right? But here's what I told him, and here's what I saw. You know, in the 70s, you know what the biggest thing was, the difference? If somebody in a church in the 70s was not right with God, they knew it and wanted to be right with God. Today, if they're not right with God, they'll say, I know I'm not right with God. I'm not doing that. Do you know that everybody, now that includes you, everybody in this country wants to be at a party? Even in our churches, you know what we've been convinced? We've been convinced that we were put here to enjoy life. And that enjoying life is what it's all about. And everybody wants to be at a party. No, I didn't say you want to go to some dope party, sex party, booze party. No, that's not what you want. You just want to go to a tailgate party. You just want to sit around the backyard, sip iced tea, and talk about the Bible. And the pastor says, but guys, we need to knock on some doors and win somebody to Christ. Well, preacher, man, you're messing up my party. Everybody wants to be in this world. Good night, people. You're more interested in what's going on in this world. You know, I'm from Ohio. I tell people, you know, I like to see the Buckeyes win. And if they win, I'm happy for 5 minutes. And if they lose, I'm upset for 5 minutes. You say, what do you do after that? Forget it, man. Stupid game. Just a stupid game. And then I come into church and say, ooh, I wonder if I'm going to rain on somebody's parade. And grown men are playing fantasy football. Do you know what fantasy football is for? That is for men who could not hit the beach with a boat. And they think they're a professional football coach. Fantasy? What, you mean that there is nothing going on in your life that is real enough to get your attention? You've got to pretend? I mean, are you thinking about this? I worry, man. I worry about, he's on my fantasy team. I'll be honest, I kind of got one of those two. But it's not fantasy football, it's fantasy bowling. Yeah. I just sit here like this. Huh? Wasn't that exciting? I worry. What are we thinking? Guys, we're going to leave this all behind. Do you understand? You know, not everything in the world is sin. But even if it's not sin, it is sure a waste of your time and your money and your effort. You're out there trying to perfect something for a world that doesn't love your God, doesn't like you, doesn't like your church. And then you start looking at somebody in that field. Well, I like him. You don't even know him. Really, you don't even know. I heard this. Remember when O.J. Simpson was on trial for murder? I heard this radio talk show, and this guy he's talking to the radio talk show host, and he says this. He's talking about, he says, Simpson's innocent, you know. He said, why do you say that? He said, well, I'll just tell you this. The O.J. Simpson I know wouldn't kill anybody. And this guy goes, oh, you know O.J. Simpson? And he goes, what? No, I've just seen him play football and seen him in movies. They need to find out where that guy lives and take all of the knives and forks out of his house. He'd be easy to find. He's probably got four holes right here. We tried to use a fork. I mean, come on, guys. The O.J. Simpson, he knows that all he's seen him is play movies and football? And you know what you think? You watch some basketball star, football star, baseball star. Please not. Please not soccer. Come on. But you watch some stupid sporting event, And then you go, well, I like him. Oh, yeah. And if you ever met him, you know what you'd never do? You wouldn't dare invite him to this church. You'd be embarrassed. Oh, I hope my pastor doesn't embarrass me. Oh, if he doesn't preach something, you know, I'll get this guy under conviction. Yeah, but he's a Christian. Yeah, but he's a King James Bible believer, too. You wouldn't even want him to know you're a King James Bible believer. You'd let him use his NIV or anything else. What are you doing? You know what you need to do? Get out of Egypt. Guys, when I was in high school, you know how you knew a girl was dating a high school football player? She wore a jersey with his name and number on the back. I was in a restaurant not long ago. There's four grown men going steady with Brett Favre. Scared me to death. Do you remember what happened back in the book of Exodus? Moses, you know, he killed that Egyptian, and then Pharaoh found out, and he headed out of Egypt. He comes down there to those Midianites, and the Bible tells us that his future wife is there, and her sisters, and they're herding the flocks. But because they were the women, the other shepherds would come in, and they'd make them wait. And they'd water all of their sheep and all their flocks, and then when everybody's done, then these girls, they're always getting home late. But on this day, old Moses ran those guys off, said, you let these girls water their sheep. They got home early, and their dad said, didn't you water the sheep? Yeah. Well, did they give you a hard time? Well, yeah, they did. But an Egyptian ran everybody off and watered our sheep. Let me ask you a question. Was Moses an Egyptian? Come on, was he an Egyptian? Why'd they think he's an Egyptian? Yeah, I bet he's dressed like an Egyptian. I'll bet you, man, I'll bet you he had a baseball hat on with a flat bill sideways, showing you that much of his underwear. I'll bet you had them baggy pants where he took two steps before you took before his legs took one. You know what a well was? It was like the hub of the wagon wheel. All the roads, instead of going from here to here, you would take the longer route so you could go here so you could water your animals and get yourself water, and then you go that way. That was it. The well was where you would have the signposts with all those famous signs, you know, Cairo this many miles, Jerusalem this many miles. That's what the well was. I'll bet you Moses, I'll bet he arrived at that well from the road from Egypt, the highway out of Egypt. You know what I think? I think Moses spoke Hebrew with an Egyptian accent. Well, I'll tell you, I've run into some Christians, and they speak Bible with a worldly accent. And they run out getting their tattoo, and they run out getting their clothes just like the world. Man, you know what I mean? And they want to be just like Egypt. You know what some of you need to do? Get on the highway out of Egypt and leave it behind. There's another one. Now, let me explain something. Your pastor's been a friend for years. I love your pastor. There are two words. Every state has this route. When I hear these two words, here's what I see in my mind's eye. Imagine your friend walks up to you. And you say, hi, how you doing? He says, good. And then he pulls out a pistol and starts shooting at you. He's trying to kill you. You say, a friend? Mm-hmm. When a friend says these two words, in my mind's eye, as he says these two words, I see him draw a gun, aim it at me, and start pulling the trigger. Say, what could those two words be? Short cut. Oh my, when you are 65 feet long, 14 feet tall, 32,000 pounds, you don't take the short cut. I have well-meaning church members. I'm going from one place to another, and they'll go, hey, I know a shortcut, and I just see him going, hey. You say, what? Oh, listen, we don't take shortcuts. You know the two biggest things they forget when they give you a shortcut? Height and weight. Oh, man, we're in Arkansas. Everything's gray in Arkansas. The highways are gray lines in Arkansas. And this preacher brought me in on this. I mean, we're on a dirt road that is as wide as my rig. We got the fifth wheel and a 40-foot, the 40-foot fifth wheel and the dually. I come around, turn. There's nowhere to turn this thing around. And there is an old wooden bridge. We are about 22,000 pounds, 25,000 pounds, and the bridge says 12,000 pound max weight limit. Say, what'd you do? We're still there. I stopped and we're still, no. Well, I went across the bridge. Well, I'll bet you went real slow. No. Oh, no, man, listen. Big old V10. You say, why V10? Because it'd have a V12. I'd have got a V55. I don't care. Man, I dropped that thing in the low range. I hammered it. That thing, I mean, it just jumped. I hit that as fast as I could. I mean, that thing was vibrating for 5 minutes after we crossed it. You know what I said? Well, don't you think that's hard on the bridge? You think I care about that bridge? I care about the other side of that bridge. I want to look in my mirror and go, I'm watching it go, I don't want to go across slow, hear a cracking sound, and boom, off we go. No, man, I hit it as fast as I can. I get across that thing. Then when I get there, I go, hey, preacher, you brought me across a 12,000-pound bridge. Oh, brother, I'm sorry. This is a shortcut. Same rig. I'm going to Long Island. Guy says, preacher says, pastor says, he's going to be coming across a bridge. Get in the left lane. I'm a big old steel bridge at George Washington. I don't know what it was, one of them big bridges. And he says, get in the left lane because the exit's a left. Sure enough, there's my left exit. It's a 180-degree turn. I make a 180-degree turn. It's 12 feet wide. Okay, this little road is 12 feet wide. And it is after I make this 180-degree turn, and I'm committed. There's no getting out of this. And there's the flashing yellow lights and the sign that says 11-foot clearance ahead with chains hanging down. I'm 12 feet tall. We're about to make this fifth wheel a convertible. I hit them chains, splattered my clearing lights all over the place, man. I mean, we did it. I said, what am I going to do now? I pulled under a bridge, and I thought, it has finally happened. The Gips are going to live under a bridge. Now we're going to do it in style, all right? And I called the preacher, and I said, preacher, I said, you sent me where there's an 11-foot clearance. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm 12 feet tall. He said, well, you'll never get under it. You just think that massive intellect always working. I said, what am I supposed to do? He said, I don't know. Well, I thought I could stay here, but there was a Puerto Rican club looking at my fifth wheel like it was their next clubhouse. And so I said, look, here's what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to start down the road. And when I come to the 11-foot clearance, I'm going to pull right up to it. And I'm going to shut it up. He said, well, they'll call the state patrol. I said, yeah, they sure will. They'll call a tow truck and tell you. I said, they sure will. He said, they're going to fine you. I said, mm-hmm. I said, you got a plan B? He said, no. I said, see you when I get out of jail. We started down the road, and of all things, there's an off-ramp. We just hit the off-ramp. On Long Island, in New York City, we hit this off-ramp. We're in a neighborhood. I mean, tall buildings that nobody's leaping over in a single bound. And I called him up, and I said, preacher, I said, I found an off-ramp, but I said, I'm in a neighborhood. He goes, and this guy used to work. He worked downtown New York City. He knew New York City literally like the back of his hand. He said, what's the name of the street? We came by the street, and I gave him the name. He goes, oh. He said, you're in a Russian neighborhood. Don't stop. Be honest, he didn't have to tell me that last part. Because they were looking at my trailer too. But he gave me, it was like, you know them voice turn for turn directions? He said, you keep on going, and he said about, you can come to a third stop sign, and it's going to be like 14th Street, you turn left. Third stop sign, there's 14th Street, we turn left. He said, now you're going to go on, it's going to dead end in a school yard, and he said, you make another left, and you make a right around it. We made the left, made the right around it. This guy just literally talked us, we're talking on the cell phone, talked us through New York City. I hate shortcuts. We don't take shortcuts. You know what everybody wants in this country? A shortcut. We are Americans. You know, lose weight, and eat anything you want. Learn French while you're asleep. Never leave your living room and make $10,000 a week. Everybody in this country, you know what we all want? We all want a shortcut. You want a shortcut? You know what you all think? You think that life is a bunch of formulas, and if you just get this formula, it's all going to be okay. If you follow this formula, you'll marry the right person, and you'll all live happily ever after. In a movie, not in real life. If you follow this formula, you'll lose weight, and you'll keep it off. When they sell you the stuff, but not in real life. Guys, do you know what's wrong with state lotteries? Not what you think. You say it's gambling, and gambling's bad. Gambling is bad, but there's something far worse. Do you know what lotteries and gambling have done to us? They have made everybody in this country looking for windfall wealth. We have got people who don't have two dimes to rub together. You know what they all believe? I bought a lottery ticket. Next week, I'm going to be a multimillionaire. Why? If you thought you were going to be a multimillionaire and you had a chance to get a job this week, why would you get that job? And next week, when they make the drawing and they don't get it, they never say, well, I guess I better get a job. You know what they say? Better get another ticket. Because next week, I'm going to be a multimillionaire. And when that one doesn't work, well, next week, I'm going to be a multimillionaire. Now, I know what you're saying. Well, preacher, we're Christians. We don't play the lottery. No, no, no. You're hoping to get rear-ended. You're hoping to find a cockroach in your Pepsi. You want one of your kids just to, you know, fall down at the playground so you can own something. Isn't that right? We all want windfall wealth. And if you believe in windfall wealth, you don't believe in working to make money. And everybody is looking for a shortcut. Shortcut to happiness, shortcut to wealth, shortcut to health. I'm here to tell you guys, there's no shortcut. You understand? I was in this church, and the pastor said, we got to go see this man. We're going to go visit him. I said, okay. He said, I think you'll find him interesting. I said, all right. Why will I find him interesting? He said, well, this guy is working on a mathematical formula to win the lottery. Of course, because he's going to tithe. I said, you can't do that. He said, you know that, and I knew that, but this guy don't, you know, he thinks, okay. I said, I'm interested. And we go into this, I mean, dirty, disheveled place. Hadn't been cleaned up. The guy is sitting there, and the whole place looks like the Mad Professor. There's yellow legal pad pages laying everywhere with mathematical equations. Now, I am not the least interested in winning the lottery, but I'm interested in the equation. I got to see what this guy's coming. I just got to see how this guy's thinking. I am telling you the truth. While the pastor kept him busy, I walked over to his desk, and I looked at this, and this is what it said. 2 + 2 = 4. 3 + 3 = 6. Well, you got to start low. 4 + 4 = 8. I thought, this guy's got a long way to go before he wins the lottery. You say, you ever win the lottery? Nope. He died. He died a dreamer. He died poor. He could have got him a job. You know what he's looking for? He's looking for a shortcut. Now, you think you're smarter than that, don't you? You're going to find a shortcut to health and a shortcut to happiness. Oh, man, just take this pill. It's all you'll be okay. I mean, your pain will go away. Your health will be better. Man, it'll just be wonderful. And if you do this step and this step and this step, you'll marry the right person. Guys, we have watched that stuff, and none of it happens. None of it happens. And if it does happen, it didn't happen because of the formula. It happened by accident. Now, I got to say this. Every now and then, you know what you do? You do what you never do, just so you know why you never do it. I had a pastor friend. We are literally up on a mountaintop in Tennessee. You could see Jed Clampett's house from here. I'm up on this mountaintop. It's January. We're just finishing up a meeting. We got to take off. We got to leave 4 o'clock in the morning. We're frozen to the ground. I mean, when I hooked up our trailer, it was our van and the ball hitch. We had a 35-foot trailer. When I hooked it up the night before we left, and when I stepped on the gas, the whole thing just kind of stood up and then waited. That's what you do. You just kind of wait. And then one by one, your tire go, and they finally break loose. It was drizzling, and the mist was freezing on the windshield. It was cold. We're up on a mountaintop. And here's what I got to do. I'm coming down from this church. I got to come down this highway. And I'll tell you what I hate to do. I hate to go east to go west. I hate to go north to go south. I hate to go this way a block if I got to go this. I hate this U-turn junk. I don't want to go that direction, go this direction. I mean, I can't stand that stuff. And here's the thing. I got to come down. It's one of those bold red lines, you know. I got to come. It's a two-lane highway, and I'm going to come down here. I'm headed for Nashville. It's over here. And this road comes down and then sweeps to the east. Then it intersects Interstate 40, and then I'm going to double backwards. I hate this here. That right there, that little curve, I hate that. And so, you know, the pastor, man, I preached for years, good friend, trusted friend. And he says, where are you going next? I said, Nashville. He said, how are you going to go? I said, well, we'll go down here and hit 40 and double back. I said, man, I hate that, doubling back. He goes, brother, you don't have to go that way. I said, what do you mean? He said, there's a shortcut. And instead of seeing him pull a gun, I said this. He's my friend. He loves me. He would never mislead me. Right. I said, where? He takes my map. He said, you come down here, Justin, you're going to go. Yeah. He said, now you see this road right here. Now we go off the bold red line to the narrow red line. And in Tennessee, it's already not fun. We're not talking about out in the west where it's gun barrel straight for 400 miles. I mean, we're talking about weaving around. But he said, you turn off of here and you go out this red line. And he said, you come to this intersection here and you go straight south. And then he used, this is kind of like when if you're trying to sell something to a drug dealer or a druggie, you just say the right word. And here's what he said. It'll save you half an hour. Save me half an hour. This is my friend. I said, okay. I said, now you're sure it's okay? Oh, yeah, good road. And then he said this. If that was not enough, he said this. He said, and brother, if you want to save another 15 minutes. Can you imagine 45 free minutes of life? 45 minutes. I am ahead of the scale. 45 minutes when I get through this. I'm going to be 45 minutes advanced into the future because I'm going to take this shortcut. He said, brother, and he used these words. He said, if you want to save another 15 minutes, he said, right here, like the crossbar on an A, is another road that's not even on the map. Now, at that point, I mean, I should have saw flares and red fireworks blowing up. But, oh, no, he loves me, and he is my friend. Now, could I give you some advice? You get down to the south part of this country, beware of directions that say, go to the orange rock and turn. I mean, really, you know, that's, you just have, yeah, you'll see an overturned milk truck been there. It's about 1923 Ford. It's turned right there. And so we get up that morning, my son and I, John, you know, we got it all hooked up. We broke it loose and the mist is freezing on the windshield. It's still dark. We come down here. There's the route. We make the right turn. There's the road. There's the orange rock. I make my left. You know what bad directions are? Bad direction is just the one thing they forget to tell you. Like the 12,000-pound bridge, like the 11-foot clearance, and like the don't make the first left. Make the second one. I hit the crossbar. I came to the four-way stop. I made a left. It's still dark. And we are on a logging road on the side of a mountain, pulling a 35-foot trailer with a van that doesn't have four-wheel drive in snow and ice. I mean, I'm on a logging road, guys. It's two ruts with leaves and ice, and my rear wheels are zzz. We're barely moving up this hill. And I'm telling you, what I was doing, I was putting new finger grips in the steering wheel. And here, I'm screaming. I really am. I'm going up this hill. I'm going, this is why I never do this. Don't ask me what happened. We made it off the logging road. waved at Jed. We came into a town, and the road was you know how it was this morning? Sheet of ice? The road was a sheet of ice. We got two axles, four wheels on the van, two axles, four wheels on the trailer. We came in an eight-wheel sideways skid into this town on ice. Now, get it under control. Do you know where we got back this highway? We came down here. We turned here. We turned here. We turned here. We turned here and came out 5 miles below where I turned off that road. You say, what happened to your friend? Let me simply say, he knows where Jimmy Hoffa is. They still ain't found his body. But you know what the problem is, guys? You're looking for a shortcut. You're looking for a shortcut to wealth, shortcut to health. If I just take this, I'll be okay. I just take this little herb. I just take this little pill. If I just do this little thing. If I just do this and this, I'll make money. If I just do this and this, I'll lose weight. I could eat 14 donuts every day, but if I do this, I'll lose weight. And I do this, I'm gonna be rich in a week. And I'm here to tell you there's no shortcut to life. You know what you got to realize? Start building and build it a brick at a time. And give yourself about 15 or 20 years. And there's not one person here who wants to wait 15 or 20 years. There's another one. All got this one. You've got them. Ohio's got them. Everybody's got them. They even put a sign up to tell you about it. Rough road. You ever been on rough road? Yeah, we've been on some rough road. You know, when I go to preach in New Guinea, we fly into Port Moresby. From there, we fly into Mount Hagen. The mission station where we would go preach from Mount Hagen Airport is 35 miles away from the airport. It takes 6.5 hours to drive there. 2.5 hours by highway, 4 hours by hellway. You drive this thing they call a highway. You would never call this a highway. Listen, brother, when they use Volkswagens to fill the potholes, it is not a highway. I mean, there are places where the potholes go from here to that wall. That is the truth. You drive down into a pothole and drive from here to that wall, and that's the highway. That's the good road. After 2.5 hours of that, you turn off, and now we're going to head into the jungle. Let me tell you what you don't do. You don't turn off that highway and drive into the jungle. You're about to go in the jungle 4 hours, guys. You know what you do? You resecure your load. The missionary gets out, Brother Dennis Wells. You have to have a blue tarpaulin or some kind of a canvas over the load at all times. You know why? Because if you don't, the thieves will jump up on the back of your truck and start pitching things off to their friends. By the time you stop and get a, you know, you might get one piece back, but they're already in the woods. So they put a blue tarpaulin over it, and he tightened it down, make sure that they got some fuel. We got some food and some bottled water. Then we start into the jungle. Now, you guys, you ever hear about the state of Georgia? The state of Georgia is all red clay, and when it's wet, it's real slick. Well, Papua New Guinea has bought all their topsoil from Georgia. And they just got to spread it like peanut butter. It's about that thick on the whole country. And whenever it's wet, it's slick. And it's always slick because it's always wet. And when we make this left turn, that's when I say, Dennis, let me drive. Because I like to drive that. It's a little Toyota four-wheel drive, Hilux, steering wheel on the right. And what I do is I get it behind the wheel, and I put it down in four-wheel drive low. That's granny low. Put it down in first gear, seldom get to second. And for the next 4 hours, I will drive about as fast as you can walk. Brother, we will go down there where we are pushing some water with the front bumper. On this road, I was telling somebody, we cross what they call the Iron Bridge. The Iron Bridge is the only modern structure on that road. You've seen a railroad trestle where they build that, you know, that iron girdered framework above it. Well, that's what this is. It's that design. But it's a road, and they made the roadbed out of 2x12 plank. But when they cut the ribbon and dedicated the road and left for Port Moresby, all the folks in the neighborhood had a better use for the planks. So they stripped the roadbed up, and it's just open. You know what you do? You put one tire on this beam, you put another tire on this beam, and you don't answer your cell phone. You drive along that road. There are places where they have rocks, big rocks, stationed all over the road where they're trying to slow you down or stop you so the bandits can rob you. You drive along there, and you go through the villages, and after 3 hours of that, you turn on to the bad road. One place where I'm driving, if it's not raining and I got my arm on the windowsill, the surface is just 6 inches below my arm. I'm talking about the top of the dirt of the earth, because that road is dug so far down under the ground. And after we turn off this 3 hours of this onto the bad road, this is just two ruts into the jungle. And about a half a mile now before you get into the village is a ravine. And it's about a 150-foot drop. We're coming from this direction, and the village is on that side of the ravine. You get this ravine, and they got a guy posted right here. He's a caller. He just stands there all day, and he's waiting to see that big red, that little red Hilux truck. He sees us now. We're a mile away, so he's got about an hour. He turns around, and he calls across the ravine, because on the other side, there's another guy stationed. When he hears this guy call, he turns around and he calls towards somebody else, who calls towards somebody else, who calls towards somebody else, who calls to the village. They know we're now coming, and the whole village comes out. They come down the ravine, they cross the bridge, they come back up the other side, and they meet us right here. Now, they're not there to greet you. They must really want to see. No. They'll see us when we pull in the village. Why come all that way to meet us? Because if we start down, they hand dug a little what they call a road in the face of this ravine. Red, dirt, slick, and wet. And if we start down that ravine, you're just going to slide off the side. You're just going to slide off. You can't stop the truck. The reason the whole village is there is because they tie a rope to the back bumper of the truck and lower the truck down that ravine. And while they're doing that, you got people on the cliff side pushing the truck to keep it on there. You treat these people real good. And then when you get down to the bottom, you cross what I call a get right with God bridge. Because any outstanding issues you had with God on this side, trust me, by the time you got to that side, you take care of them. You will confess things you had forgotten about for years. I am pretty sure I got some sin on credit because I confessed things I didn't even do. And I was not there a couple of years later when the bridge gave way and the truck went down into the river. Then once you get across this get right with God bridge, now you got to go up this side of the ravine, so they tie the rope to the front bumper and they pull, push, and push, 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 push to get you up to the top. That is some rough road. Brother, there's some rough road out there. For 15 years, we boycotted I-80 across Pennsylvania. Interstate highway. I don't know what it is about Pennsylvania. Brother Craig Collingwood's brother, Mike, lives in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. You know why it's named Pottstown? That is where they have the factory where they build all the potholes for Pennsylvania. And whenever they put in a new highway, they send out crews and go, oh, look, we have a half mile of nice road. Let's put a couple potholes in here. We were going across 80. It wasn't potholes. You know what it was? Frost heave. Every concrete seam was like this. For 8 hours across Route 80, we're going like this. Boom, 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 boom. I'm looking in the mirror. I'm seeing my bends open and things fall out onto the highway. We finally got out. We had furniture in that trailer turned upside down. My wife had a bottle of poppy seeds. I don't know what she was sniffing. And can you get this? If you don't think there's a devil, the lid came off and it turned upside down. We found poppy seeds in that thing till we got rid of it. After 8 hours, I was headed for Connecticut. When I got into that church, I got out of my van and I told the pastor, I said, if there's anybody in your church you want killed, now is the time. I said, we will take the whole family. I'm ready to go. I am serious, brother. I say, why'd you start driving it? Because they tore it all out, put it all back in. It's okay now. Rough road. You ever been on a rough road? Man, that'll jar your guts and jar your kidneys and jar your teeth. Let me tell you what the secret is to Rough Road. There's only one real secret. You know what it is? Keep it moving. You don't have to drive fast. Just keep it moving. Man, sometimes, you know, you're in that rough road and you're in four-wheel low and those wheels are spinning and you're slinging mud. But you say, well, yeah, but you're barely moving. Yeah, but you're barely moving. But barely moving is moving. You stop, you know what happens? You never get started again. You know what happens in life? You get on some rough road. You ever been on some rough road? Man, a victim of circumstances. Something turns your life upside down. And suddenly, when everything was all nice, all of a sudden it's bad. And you say, you know what, preacher, we're just going to drop off church for a while. I'm going to quit tithing for a while because we're having some financial problems. You're never coming back, buddy. You know what you did? You stopped. If you will just keep going, you will get through this. There have been times when I've been barely moving. We've been out in the snow, and we are barely moving, but we're moving. And if you just keep going, pretty soon, you get on good road. But if you stop here, you're stuck. You're never getting out. Guys, I won't be too graphic. I broke my neck in 1973, worked for 2 months with my neck broken before the doctor found out, because my doctor was that doctor you heard about that was practicing medicine. And basically, my life isn't like your life. I have nights when I'm up all night. I have nights when I wake up yelling. The last last six months, I was up in 2008, in May of 2008, I was up in Gaylord, Michigan, preaching. And here's how this is. You have pain. You know what you have? You have bad times. You have 2 or 3 hours of pure pain through the day. And then pretty soon, you get so many hours of pain during the day that you don't count the hours of bad pain. You count the 2 or 3 hours that you don't hurt. And then you say, well, I had a bad day. But then you have so many bad days that you start counting the good days. And then you get it down where you just got like a good hour. And it got to where if I had a good time, it went 20 minutes. 20 minutes, that's all I'd have. And I was preaching this meeting in May of 08. And Kathy wasn't with me. She's in Billings, Montana. And I woke up that morning. It was a Thursday morning. The meeting was over last night. Two guys coming to pick me up, take me 2.5 hours to Traverse, Michigan, pick up a plane from there to Detroit to O'Hare to Billings, probably Salt Lake City and then Billings. And I woke up that morning, and I didn't hurt. And when I don't hurt, I know I got 20 minutes, but I got nothing to do. I can't do anything because they're coming to get me. So I'm waiting. Guys, when it came back, that pain came back that day. It brought every distant relative it ever had. I'm in this car with these two guys. They don't know this. They're taking me to the airport. All I want to do is scream. They take me down to Traverse. I get on a plane. They close that door. I want to scream, get me off this plane. But I knew if I get off the plane, I got to get to Billings. I get off the plane in Billings, and Kathy said, what's the matter? I said, how'd you know? She said, you're pale. I said, babe, I don't know what happened, but I said, it's over. I said, I can't go any farther. This is it. And that was it. I called, canceled the rest of the year, and we headed for Louisville, Kentucky to have that surgery. The next 2.5 months before that surgery, if I sat in a chair, my wife would put my head back, and when I had to stand up, she would lift it up. And when I laid down at night, she would lay my head down. And when I would wake up in the morning, she had to lift it up. Every single night for 2.5 months, I'd wake up sometime during the night screaming. I'm not, I don't let things bother me much. And you know, they dope you before they take you in for surgery. And I had that surgery. In fact, when they had the surgery, I'm in recovery. And the doctor told her there, he said, he needs another surgery right now. His whole neck is gone. But before I went into surgery, she said, do you know what you said before they took you into surgery? I said, no, what did I say? She said, you said, I don't care if I die. Well, that's just not me, but that's about where it was. And so they did that surgery. Now, like I said, we're looking at another surgery possibly in February. And there's just always some problem and always some pain. Which kind of like the roof leaks and we fix this one and then another leak and another leak. And we ain't getting a new roof. We ain't getting a new roof, guys. Lord's going to come back. okay? And there's been days when I wake up in the morning, I'll tell you what I do. I do two things. I get my 30 pages of my Bible read, and you know what I do? I go back to bed, and I got a prayer. You know what my prayer is? All day long, I lay in bed, and I say this, God, give me one good hour tonight so that I can preach, and nobody knows there's a problem. That I get done preaching, I go right back out to that trailer, and I go right back to bed, absolutely in pain. And there's days I get up, and here's what you want to hear. You want to hear, I just open up that Bible, and I quote a verse. Not just that's just what I needed. And I hate to tell you, but that's not what it always is. You know what it is? I get up in the morning, and here is what I say. Right foot. Left foot. Right foot. Left foot. You say you don't. You want that? I will tell my feet right, left for an hour and a half. I will tell myself to walk. I will tell myself what to do. I have to tell myself every action because my head feels like it is about to explode. It feels like somebody's got my eyeballs in their fist. They're going to squeeze them till they pop. I have to tell my body everything it's got to do until it picks it up and starts doing it by itself. You say, why do you do that? Because I ain't quitting. Because I am not laying in bed. I am telling you, look, I am sorry, okay? I am on your side. I am sorry for your physical problem or your emotional problem or your financial problem or your marriage problem. I am sorry for what took the wind out of your sails, what took the joy out of your life, what took the blue out of your sky. I am sorry. But I'm telling you that if you're going to let it stop you, you are stopped. You are stopped. Well, I went to the Bible. Well, preacher, listen. It can't be the church, and it can't be the preacher. And I hate to say it, but there's going to be times when you're just going to say, I'm not even getting anything from that book. What do I do? It's called right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot. You have got to keep moving. Don't you drop out of church. Don't you quit reading your Bible. Don't you quit tithing. Don't you quit doing what you know you should. You keep on going and keep on going and keep on going. And somewhere down there, and I can't tell you where that place is, and I can't tell you when you'll hit that spot, but somewhere down there, if you keep on going, you'll get going. Brother, you got to get through those. And you know, we get this idea, well, I need somebody to help me. There can't always be somebody to help you. There can't always be somebody to pat you on the back and tell you you're a hero and carry you. It's just not going to happen. That is not life. Life has rough road. And it's devastating. And you've got to keep on going. And the secret to rough road is you just keep it moving, keep it moving, keep it moving. And pretty soon, you get some traction. And you pick up some speed. And pretty soon, you're going down the road just fine. You got through the rough part. You know what some Christians do? They hit that rough road, they shut her down. And they say, I'm going to wait till the road's not rough. Hey, fool, if you stop in the middle of a rough road, how are you going to, well, you going to wait till they come and pave it? Don't you understand? Best way to get through rough roads is get through it. I had this happen. I was preaching at a church up in New England. They had me staying in a missionary apartment above the garage with no heat. It was in February. And no bathroom. For heat, they had a kerosene heater. I got sick, absolutely sick. To go to the bathroom, here's what you did. You walked across the attic of the garage in the dark because the light switch is at the top of the steps. Then you went down the steps and walked across the garage in the dark because the light from down there is at the other end of the garage. Then you walk across the yard in about 8 inches of snow. Now, you ready for this? The pastor was adding on to his house, so he had built the basement out about 10 feet. So you walked across a snow-covered 2x12 into the house. I did that once. Say, so what did you do after that? I don't know. I don't want to say. But there is a jar up there in that up in that garage. I hope they never use for iced tea. That's all I can tell you. And that kerosene made me sick. Man, I got sick. Kathy wasn't with me. We had this little four-wheel drive Eagle wagon, and I got done, and Kathy's back in Ohio, and I told preacher, I said, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave tonight after service. I left that night. It was 23 degrees. There were 18 inches of snow on the ground. I was rolling snow up with the front bumper of that Eagle. I called a pastor about 2.5 hours south, and I said, "Brother, just give me a place to stay." I said, "I'll sleep in your basement. I'll sleep anywhere. Just give me a place to stay." He said, "I got a place for you." I was so sick. I went to his house. I laid down. I slept. I got up the next morning. I jumped in that Eagle. I started back down. I'm going across Pennsylvania. I am so sick. And you know what I'm thinking? I'm going to pull off the side of the road here. I can't even make it to a rest stop. I'm just going to pull off the side of the road and sit. Now, here's how I think. You tell me. You answer this. If I'm sitting alongside the road, am I going to feel any better? No. But every minute I sit there, isn't that going to be one more minute I got to be in this car to get where I'm going? So I didn't stop. So what did you do? Kept on going. So what happened? I died. It was terminal. No, guys, I made it. And I'm telling you, life is going to have some rough road for you. But the key is to keep moving. I'm sorry for taking so long. I'll move along. Two more. I had 6 months of Spanish. I took 6 months of Spanish when I was in ninth grade. I learned only one thing in Spanish. I preached for a couple of Spanish pastors, friends of mine. I preach up in Rochester, New York for a Spanish pastor. And I told him, I tell his church, I said, "Your pastor loves me." And I said, "He thinks that I am the smartest and best-looking evangelist he knows." And he tells me that in Spanish every time he sees me. He says, "Ustedes muy tonto y feo." Now, none of you laughed. Okay, here's what I just said in Spanish. "You're very ugly and stupid." And they all chuckle. They get a big laugh out. That's what I learned in 9 months. That was my whole thing. But let me tell you about this. I have a Spanish textbook in ninth grade, hardcover book like this. And you know what the front is? It's a blue sky, and it's a stanchion that comes up, and a large brass bell. You know what the name of my ninth grade Spanish textbook was? El Camino Real, the King's Highway. Let me tell you what the El Camino Real was. It is a real place. It starts in San Diego, California. It was built, and it goes all the way up to San Francisco. And in those days, now look, I know the Roman Catholic Church had the wrong message, but there were some folks in there that they thought they were serving God, you understand? And what they did is they would build about every 10 or 15 miles, they'd build a mission. And the mission was away from the road, so out at the road they put this bell up, and if you were traveling on that road and you need a place to stay, you stop up there, you ring that bell, somebody would come down, and you'd spend the night there. That is now, it's part of Route 1, 101, and 154. Those three routes are the old El Camino Real. And I'll tell you what happened, man. We're out in California. First time we ever went there, probably around 87, or 89. And we're driving down this highway, and right there on the side of the road is this stanchion that comes up. It bends over. Here's this great big brass bell. I am looking at the bell. It was on my ninth grade textbook. You say the exact one? No, I don't know. I really don't, because they've got them all along there. But what a thrill it was for me to see that bell. But you know what that El Camino Real was? Now listen, here's what it was. It was built for some people who were on a mission for God. It might have been the wrong religion, okay? They might have had the wrong message, but they were doing something for God, were they not? You know what you need to do? You need to get on your own little El Camino Real. You need to get a mission for God and get on the King's Highway and just do something for God. Let me tell you what we saw on the El Camino Real one day. Kathy and I were in a meeting, and off maybe a mile away, 2 miles away, I saw the side of this hill. It's a mountain. They have mountains all over, but the side of this hill, and the first half of it is purple, and the other side of it is orange. I've never seen anything so beautiful in my life. I said, "Babe, we got to go there." I dead reckoned. Man, we dead reckoned. We came around this bend, and there it was. I mean, that hillside was easily as high as the ceiling of this room. And the first half of it, the purple was lupin. And the orange was poppies. Poppy, that is the state flower of California. You should have known. Anyway, man, we looked at that now. You say, "Well, where was that?" I couldn't take it to you today. I didn't set it in my GPS so that I can always find it again. Let me tell you, you know what happens? You get on that El Camino Real, that King's Highway, that goes down along Route 1 along the Pacific. You're above there. You can see the big old volcanic rocks in the ocean. You can watch the waves crashing. It is one of the most beautiful highways. It literally is one of the most beautiful scenic highways in this country. We have been in some weird places. We've been in Two Egg, Florida. We have been in Two Gun, Arizona. I mean, we've been in some weird places. I told you, I read the map. I read the atlas. I read every state. You know what I have never found yet? I have never found a town called Happiness. I have never found a town called Happiness. You know what's wrong with you? You think that happiness is a destination. If you just do this and this and this, you'll arrive there, and then you can buy a house and live there all of your life. No. Let me tell you what you do. Get on a mission for God. Get on the El Camino Real and just go about doing what you're supposed to do for God. Happiness is not a destination. It's something you pass through on the way of doing what God wants you to do. If you want to find happiness, you know what our problem is? If something good happens and makes us happy, we analyze it, we isolate it, we say, how can I get back this? I'm sorry, you can't always get back to it. But boy, you can enjoy it while you're there. And guys, if you would get on a mission for God, get on the El Camino Real, just say, I'm going to do something for God, I am telling you, you will pass through some of the most blessed times on this planet. And they won't be, okay, 10 more minutes, 10 more miles to that beautiful place. No, it's never like that. You just come over a hill and there it is. You'll just come around a bend and there's those flowers. I'm telling you guys, if you go on a mission for God, if you go on the El Camino Real, it is beautiful. One last one. I want you to turn to two places and I'll be done. I want you to go to Isaiah chapter 35. We're going to go there first. Then we're going to go to 1 Samuel chapter 27. And then I'm going to leave you with a question. Isaiah chapter 35, 1 Samuel chapter 27. Isaiah chapter 35 says this in verse 8, and an highway shall be there. Guys, when I hear the word highway, my ears perk up. My heart is set toward the highway. And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. The ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads, and they shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. I have come into some churches. I've had people say, I want to learn the Bible. I want to preach. I want to start a church. I want to accomplish something for God. I want this. I've met them, but they said, I want to be a millionaire. You know what I've never? You ready for this? 43 years of preaching. You know what I've never had? I've never had one person come up and say, I want to be holy. Boy, I know they want to be rich. They want to be successful. They want to be famous. They want this. They want that. They want to be happy. I have never met a Christian yet who said, I so just want to be holy. You see, you have been corrupted by this world. Somebody tells you to do something and you react just like they taught you. You know how they taught you? Whenever somebody says, do this, you know what you say? What's in it for me? That's the wrong question. You listen to the next election. Well, if you vote for this guy and he gets in, what's in it for you? And if you get this guy in, what's in it for you? What's in it for you is you're not in the equation. What's in it for God? And you know why being holy doesn't interest you? Because it takes some work and there's nothing for you. What do you get from it? You don't get anything. Well, I don't see anybody looking to be holy. Wouldn't it be something if a bunch of folks said, oh God, I'd just like to be holy. I'd just like to be somebody that you could look down and kind of like be a breath of fresh air. That you would say, I'm tired of the filth and I'm tired of the staleness of that world and I'm tired of the stench of that world, and when I come over here and I look at you and I see what you're trying to do just to be holy, it's just like the fragrance of a flower. I don't see anybody wanting to be holy. Man, I like this road. Look what it says. It says, the wayfaring man, though fools shall not enter it. Hey, guys, I'm a wayfaring man. I'm a fool. I was on a highway one time, I-80, we're headed east. Man, we are making time. And that sign, every time we pass that sign, I noticed Bristol, Tennessee, we're getting closer and closer. And after 2.5 hours, I said to Kathy, hey, babe, you notice Bristol, Tennessee is getting closer? She said, yeah, I did. I said, Bristol, Tennessee is supposed to be behind us. Man, I was on the right road going the wrong direction. Say, what'd you do? Soon as I found out, I didn't wait for an off-ramp. I went through those authorized version things in the median strip. Brother, I mean trailer and truck. We went through that thing, bounced around, hammered it down, and made tracks the other way. Wayfaring man was a fool, and he erred. I'm telling you guys, I know I'm a fool. You understand? But I'm looking for a way that when I get on it, even when you're stupid as I am, you can't make a mistake. Wouldn't that be neat? No sorrow, no sadness, just joy and gladness. You want joy and gladness. You know what you don't want? You don't want to bother being holy. You want, but you don't want to do anything for Him. Man, what would God think if somebody just said, I just want to be holy for you? There's the loneliest road and the road of destitution. And there's the Via Della Rosa and the scenic highway. There's the highway out of Egypt, and there's the shortcut, and there's rough road, and there's the El Camino Real. And there's the highway of holiness. And I want you to go to 1 Samuel chapter 27. And I'll read a little verse here, and then I'll ask you a question, let you go. David is out and about. He and his men. He's living with the Philistines. And when he returns to King Achish, the Bible says this in verse 10. When David gets back, Achish says, whither have you made a road today? You know what he said to David? He said, David, whither have you made a road today? He said, David, where you been? Where you been today? What road have you been traveling today, David? Can I ask you people a question? Whither have you made a road today? What road have you been traveling today? Loneliest road? Is that the one? Maybe you need to get on the road of destitution. Have you been on rough road? Are you spinning your wheels out there on the scenic highway looking for some dream that's never going to come true? Have you been wasting your time on a shortcut that ain't going to get you anywhere? You know what I'm asking you tonight? Whither have you made a road today? I don't know where you've made a road. I know this. If it's the wrong road, there's always an off-ramp. And maybe you need to get on that Via Della Rosa. Maybe somebody needs to hit the highway out of Egypt. Maybe somebody needs to get on that way of holiness or that El Camino Real, the King's Highway. And I'm going to give you a chance to make a change in direction tonight. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. Your heads bowed and your eyes closed. Whither have you made a road today? The loneliest road? Do you need to get on that road of destitution? Are you here and not saved? You need the Via Della Rosa? Maybe you're still following the folly of the scenic highway. You need to get on the highway out of Egypt. And there's no shortcut to where you want to get. Maybe you're on rough road. And all you really need to do is just keep on moving. Just keep on moving. Do not stop. Wouldn't it be nice if somebody hit the on-ramp to the King's Highway tonight? Got on a mission for God. And can you imagine what God would think and feel if somebody actually looked up to Him and said, I'd like to be holy. I'd so like to be holy. Just for You. I'd like to be a breath of fresh air for You, Lord. Whither have You made a road today? Father, thank You for Your goodness. And thank You for Your grace. Thank You, God, for watching over us. And Lord, I'm so sorry for keeping these people here so long. I did not mean to preach so long. God, before we leave, maybe somebody needs to change directions or change highways. Maybe they just spent too much time, wasted too many years, too much effort on the scenic highway. And all they found, in spite of their beautiful, idyllic scene, just back and forth and up and down, boring, dirty, slow, time consuming. Maybe they just need to change highways, God. Maybe somebody needs to get on the highway out of Egypt. Maybe somebody needs to get on the highway of holiness. Lord God, I wish these people would get on the right route tonight. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. With your heads bowed and eyes closed, folks have come. Why don't you come? Why don't you come right now as instruments play? Why don't you come? Maybe you're going through some rough road right now. If you're going through some rough road, this is not the time to get out of church. This is not the time to quit reading your Bible. This is not the time to quit your giving, quit your tithing, quit going door knocking and soul winning, quit passing out tracts. You know what you got to do on rough road? Just keep it moving. Keep it moving. You'll get through it. Folks, you come. If you need to come, you come.